You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, covering the Pacers for Forbes today. Kind of a lot to get to, not as much as I would like there to be to get to, but it is what it is. We got Summer League, we got some Sabonis news coming out of nowhere, and we got the Brogdon press conference giving us a full day of stuff to talk about on the free agency and team building front. So I guess we'll just jump right in. Just me today, no Adam, so I get to bounce my thoughts off of you guys, which is fun. So today, Malcolm Brogdon officially announced in the press conference, and I didn't really know why they were doing it alone outside of possibly timing, but it all made sense today. They had a lot of high praise from Pritchard and McMillan to give to him, and he himself had high praise of the organization, and it just kind of made sense with the way that they viewed him as like one of the best acquisitions in Pacers history, really. That they would have this be on its own and be its own thing. He announces he's wearing number 7, which doesn't really matter. I just like to know that stuff. So it started, I'll just kind of go in chronological order. I'm using my own tweets to recap the press conference, but that'll help me go in order to kind of flowed from thought to thought. So Kevin Pritchard did start addressing the rumor that Herb Simon did get involved in the trade to bring in Brogdon with the picks. He confirmed that, yeah, that did happen. His quote said that they thought they had a 10% chance to get Brogdon before Herb got involved and a 90% chance after, which basically to me means the Bucks were probably going to match, but then with the picks, the Bucks were not going to match, which is all it is, and then no one beat their offer, which was the other 10% that they wouldn't get him, so they got him. If you want to view it that Herb gave them an 80% chance of getting Brogdon, then that's okay. Then that's good. If you want to call it as they got him on a market value contract and had to give away assets, I also understand that thought. But I think that's a fair spin on both sides. So pretty much if he plays well, no one will remember this. And if he doesn't, then everybody will. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. I still don't – it doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies. It's kind of weird, but – giving me the warm and fuzzies is not a reason to not do or do something as a basketball team. So we move on from that report for now and see how he plays in the court. Some interesting stuff from Brogdon early. He said that his agents wanted him to be drafted by the Pacers in the draft in 2016. 2016. Didn't happen, obviously. No one drafted him in the first round. But he was happy to be here now. He just thinks he gels well with Victor Oladipo and the organization in general. Said, you know, he likes that the state is basketball focused. And that was after Pritchard said it was one of the best days in franchise's history because they were able to clear cap space and then get a player they really wanted, which sounds stupid, right? They got like a not all-star level player using their cap space, and that's considered one of the better days in history. But, I mean, Brogdon is probably behind D-West, second best free agent in team history. And he was restricted, and they were able to get him. I totally understand why that process, you know, which normally they have to wriggle and haggle to get just like the average guys who fit well to come. This time they're actually able to get a difference maker. I get why that's being celebrated. It was just funky phrasing that like Malcolm Brogdon is the guy. You're like, this is a franchise-changing day. Brogdon also said Victor is a guy he has wanted to play for, and McMillan is a guy he's wanted to play for, and Victor's a guy he wanted to play with. He pretty much just had a lot of nice things to say about the Pacers, and then he went on a nice, I'm glad someone asked him about this. He's involved in the NBA Players Association, as well as his charity to bring clean water wells to Africa. He spoke a lot about his off-the-court work, both aspects. And how he wants to eventually use his platform of basketball to propel him into a nice career with a nonprofit. So he just is a really good guy. There's a reason he was called the president in Milwaukee. I heard on Kevin Pritchard talking during the Summer League game, and they had Pritchard and Dan Dockett talking on the sideline during the game, and Pritchard said that there's a building at the University of Virginia where Brogdon went where only the top 20 students in the class are allowed to go there, and they can study or do whatever there, and Brogdon is the first ever athlete or maybe the first basketball player. Either way, a huge accomplishment to be able to go to that, and he was one of the first guys. And then Brogdon confirms he's going to go work out with Oladipo later in the summer. So pretty sweet press conference. He did a fantastic job of looking good. Caitlin Cooper nailed it with her tweet. She said, I didn't know if it was possible to win an introductory press conference, but if it is, Brogdon is undoubtedly winning his press conference. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was great. And then confirmed later in the day his contract structure. Is $20 million the first year, $20.7 million the second year, $21.7 million the third year, and $22.6 million the fourth year. That's not any standard sort of percent raises. That's just a bump every year. But I think perhaps that structure is done. My best guess, at least, is one to maximize the space they can do around McConnell. Now they could potentially add a 1 year of service minimum guy and have their full room exception, which perhaps later in the week me and Adam can talk about how they can use those, although we've kind of done it. And two, it means he's never higher paid than Victor Oladipo in these next two seasons. I think, I don't know that it really matters, but I think players, you know, have the pay scale to be sort of an alpha male thing. Now, I mean, I don't think that's a problem with either of the personalities Brogdon and Oladipo will bring to the team, but now it doesn't even matter because it's clearly the better player has the highest one. So, yeah, good Brogdon day. He is here, and it was a great press conference. So, that was the good start. Then, the next thing that happened today was Summer League. So, before we actually, you know what? This next thing that happened is Charlie Clifford from Wish TV dropped us a nice bomb about Sabonis. So, after the break, we'll talk about Domantas Sabonis. So, Charlie Clifford, Wish TV, gets us. Right after the press conference, gets a nice aside with Kevin Pritchard, immediately tweets out, Pritchard told me a contract extension for Domantas Sabonis is now a top priority, and then goes on to say he spoke with Sabonis' agent earlier in the offseason and made it known that once the outside deals were done, locking up the 23-year-old big man in Indiana is the goal. Ooh, spicy. They did. So let's just start with, I guess the place to start is timing. So this is now possible as of July 1st and up through the day before their first game. So I believe that's October 17th. I almost said 15th, but I want to say 17th now. So they have all this time to get this deal done. But there is benefit in waiting just to see kind of what else happens around the league. Just doing it last always makes sense in terms of extension timing, because it, you know, it doesn't impact your cap space at all this summer. You can see what you can get, see what your cap sheet's going to look like next year, and then do it. So it probably won't happen. Like Turner, if you'll remember, last summer happened like in the 11th hour, like right before the deadline it got done. I was on vacation thinking they were done doing moves, so I went into my room in Florida to record a 10-minute Miles Turner emergency podcast. I'm sure that that might happen again if they do get it done with Sabonis. So don't expect it to happen anytime soon. It'll definitely happen after the McConnell signing and the Sumner extension and whoever fills out. You know, it probably will happen after training camp even starts. So it's a while off. I would not at all worry about that being a thing that happens soon. So how these rookie extensions work is they kick in the following season. So Sabonis would play out this season on the last year of his rookie deal, and then it would kick in next year. It can be up to 4 years and up to the max, which is 25% of the cap for Sabonis on a standard rookie extension, or you can get a designated rookie extension, which will take up to 30% of the max. Sabonis is not at all worth a designated rookie extension. Karl Anthony Towns, Ben Simmons, Anthony Davis, those are the guys that off the top of my head I know got Kyrie Irving. Those are the guys I know got the designated rookie extension. It's very rare for those to be handed out to anyone besides, like, for sure this guy is going to be an all-star. Most of the time they already are. So, this is an interesting one, and I'm sure me and Adam will talk about this one too. So, the Pacers are pretty close to the salary cap next summer anyway. I don't have it exactly, but even if they, you know, if they pick up the options of Leaf and Holiday, which I think has some merit to doing, and then even if they waive McConnell, you know, they'll be about right at $7 million of space, and then they could sign Sabonis. And that is the best estimate I could give you. You know, if they add another guy to the mix, that number goes down. That's not a lot of space, and you might as well just be over the cap at that point because you can get the full mid-level exception, which is worth almost $10 million. So there might be value next summer to the Pacers in just trying to be over the cap instead of a team that operates under the cap because they get $3 million of spending power. So extending Sabonis does not impact their spending power next summer, and I think that is important because if it did, I would absolutely be against extending Sabonis. To me, if you're experimenting, and I don't know that, maybe I'm the only person using experimenting. I don't think anyone within the team's brass has specifically said so. I wish I had Mark Monti's story up so I could read more of the quotes, but you know, they did confirm, we just talked about this, that they're starting the two guys together, which is a big deal. And if that experiment fails and you extend Sabonis, now all of a sudden you have to trade him. And that's not a bad thing. You could trade him next summer. It's you can't trade him during the season, which means you're stuck with the two ill-fitting guys, which means Goga's not going to play because assuredly if it doesn't work, they would change something in the lineup. And then you have to wait to trade him until next year. And if it doesn't work, that means he probably didn't play as well as he did last year. So now he's older and making more money, and he didn't improve. So his trade value goes down. Even if he is now making a different amount of money that allows him to be traded for a different crop of players, which in theory could make, you could call that more valuable, I think the addition of the other things means it's not. So it's like hard for me to see outside of, you know, there's no real cap implication for the team next summer, and Sabonis is good, and locking up good players on long-term contracts is good. I think that is a reason to do it. And the goal with rookie extensions, as I said last summer, Turner, should be to sign a guy to a deal below his market value, because what's the point of paying him up to what you think he'll get the next summer? Just pay him that next summer, or he doesn't become worth it, and you can get him for less. So I usually like to opt to be patient with young guys. I've said this a million times, I feel like, on this show. But with Turner, it worked out. I was actually critical, for those of you who listened last summer, of the deal at the time. I thought it was too early. I didn't think, you know, I thought he was probably about a $15 million player. He'd have to be better to work his way up to that $18 million figure. And why wait? If he becomes an $18 million guy, whatever, give it to him. And then he played over that. He's probably about a $20 million player. So at worst, they're getting even value on that deal, and they didn't have to go through the painstaking process of restricted free agency this summer. So maybe I'm just an idiot, and extending Sabonis is a smart move. Good, again, good player, long-term deal, makes some sense. But because of the experimenting and the potential loss of value, I don't know that it's worth it. Now, I haven't even named a figure. Like, he's probably worth about the same deal as Turner. I could, you know, you can live with Sabonis being an $18 million guy. It's just, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me because of the experimenting factor of them both playing. And if they do extend him and then it completely flops, it's almost impossible to trade Sabonis during the season because of something called the poison pill provision, which means that in terms of outgoing salary for the Pacers, Sabonis is worth his salary for the coming season, which is $3.5 million. But to the other team, in terms of the trade math, he's worth the average annual value of his whole deal. So there's a big pitfall there that makes it really hard to match salaries and almost makes them it basically makes the player untradeable. I can't think of a poison pill player who's ever been traded. So just because I think the only reason I'm saying I don't want it is the experimenting factor, which is kind of stupid, right? He's good. And, you know, if he's good, you should keep a good player. The Pacers, just given their market and the way that team building shakes out for them, should always try to keep good players who are young. And I think I'm probably 50-50 in totality on it. It scares me because of the experimenting. But we'll have to see. I mean, if they get him at like 4 for $50, then that's a complete home run. I have no, you know, sweet, awesome, for sure do it. If it becomes 4 for $80, then I don't know. It's closer there. I saw people on Twitter saying 5 for $100, but you can't extend a rookie on a 5-year deal because the first year counts, right? So that it'd be this $3.5 million plus 4 years. So if you're saying 5 for $100, you're really saying the last 4 years at 96.5, which is almost the max. So no. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I'm sure the Pacers set a limit. I bet it is close, somewhere between 4 for $60 to 4 for $80, but that's just a complete guess. And somewhere in that range is where they'd walk away and say, nope, we'll just figure it out next summer when you're restricted. So we'll have to see. I hope I listed off the pros and cons really well. I'm sure I dragged as someone who isn't really for it, and I understand why, because my gut right away was this isn't a good idea, but I'm trying to objectively share both sides of that. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, it won't happen for a while. McConnell will become official. Sumner's extension will become official. Goga will officially be signed, which still hasn't happened because of these visa issues. So there's still some hurdles in the way. Not hurdles. There's still some other things that have to happen in the way. But then it will happen. So, yeah, there we go. So bonus extension stuff. I'm sure me and Anna will talk about it more. I have an article coming about it, hopefully today or tomorrow. Now let's move on to the last thing, actual basketball. The reason all this stuff happens, although not necessarily Summer League. Summer League, game two. Let's take a break and talk about it. I love these Summer League games. They don't matter. The wins and losses don't matter. And there's no... there's no like ramifications of losing where people are dragging and replying to me being sad all the time. It's just like they're stress-free, fun basketball. And I know that none of these guys are necessarily NBA players, but we'll have to see what happens with them. Pacers looking bad again. 84-102 loss. Another really tough shooting game from three, which really is a theme for this team. Holiday missed all five of his, and he was the best shooter in game one. They have no shooters, which I think needs to be stressed when talking about the performances of some of these guys. So I'm going to start with Holiday because he's the big carrot. He was bad in the first half. He had a lot of turnovers. In the game, he finished with seven. In the first half, I forget how many he had. It was a lot. In the third and fourth quarter, he did better, and he still finished with 20 points and 21 shots, which is not very good. So Holiday's supposed to be dominating, and in that third and fourth quarter, he did have stretches where he looked like he was. So to his credit, he picked it up. But I feel like he should be better. So there's two sides to this coin. One is that, yes, I'm disappointed that, you know, through two games, he has 44 points on something like 43 or 42 shots. You know, he's not necessarily efficient despite doing a pretty good job getting to the line and hitting outside shots. It's just, it's not all clicking for him on the offensive end. On the other hand, and this is why I can't stress this enough, the lack of shooters on this team is unbelievable. Like, no one can make a three. The lanes are so clogged. So the first game, me and Adam talked about this. It was just like, ugh, why are they driving into defenders so much and turning it over? Well, it's because there's no spacing on this team. There's not a deep ball threat really at all. So that they're just running into problems. And, yeah, that's why I think some of Holiday's problems are coming from that. I think more spacing will substantially help him, but I have not been super in, you know, he did well to be the best player on the Pacers in both games. I think that's crucial, but he needs to be better. I would be happier with that. I guess always the place to start is the NBA guys and two-way guys before I give opinions. Sumner did not play, foot injury, same foot that was bugging him in rookie minicamp, and then it makes sense to obviously be cautious in these meaningless games, especially because he already has a contract locked up. Alize Johnson did okay, 15 and 10 double-double, sounds awesome. He was only minus one, so really they really did okay in his minutes. The killer for them was the Marcus McDuffie. His 5 minutes went poorly, and he was on the floor with Holiday, Akun Purcell, and Bowen during that time, and it just sunk. Anyway, yeah, Alize did okay, only 4 for 10 shooting, but did it well to get to the line for 13 free throw attempts, so he was barreling down the lane, getting to the glass. He looked pretty good. He looked okay. His jump shot still looks funky every time he shoots it, but his ability to get around the basket and make moves is nice, especially in transition. He's a little bit, and by a little bit, I mean a fair bit worse when he's like the back it down, post him up kind of guy. He's a long way to go in that way, though. He grew up a guard, so gets the benefit of the doubt. Brian Bowen, the Summer League crush for many, including I enjoyed him in the first game. He's not my Summer League crush, though. 10 points, eight rebounds, 5 assists, looks good on D. He's the two-way guy, so he's for sure going to be on the Pacers this year, and he looks like a decent player. He's doing a lot of good stuff. He's got good defensive instincts. He's passing. He's calm in chaotic situations. I just think he sees the game better than I thought out of Australia, so I've been pleased with him, and he's playing the most minutes besides anybody but Holiday, so getting a fair bit of time seeing him. So that's all the guys for sure on the team next year. And then Jakeenan Gant has a $50,000 incentive to play for the Mad Ants on an Exhibit 10 deal. Only 3 minutes. They kind of shuffled through these end-of-roster guys who don't start just to get them all a chance to play. So Shiz Alston played in Sumner's place this time. Gant didn't play as many minutes. It's just different every game. A couple of the same guys didn't play as the first game, Travon Thibodeau and Jay Henderson. But Gant only got 3 minutes, so it is what it is. We'll see what happens with him. Shiz Alston, though, did debut 2 of 6 from 3, not afraid to pull up 10 points. He was plus 11, so they did well with him out there. I don't really know. Like, I didn't feel like he did something so awesome that I was like, oh, they need to play him more. But he was fine, and the team did well with him on the floor. So maybe there's something to him. And his name is Shiz, which is super cool. So maybe he should play more just because of that. Cody Demps, who I liked in the first game, didn't do anything super impressive. Mikal McIntosh, same thing, just kind of a body. So now we've narrowed it down to just Jalen Johnson, who is starting at center for them, and Devon Akun-Purcell. And I think they both were the best two players in this game. Jalen Johnson has shown that he can be a bruiser inside and make some nice passes for a big, and his defense is quality. It's not good. It's just fine. But for a guy I'd never heard of before this year and who is rumored to be decently friends with Oladipo, it's good to see him doing decently enough. And then my summer league crush is the last guy. I haven't talked about him yet. Devon Akun-Purcell. So I talked about him with Adam. He was on a two-way contract with the Denver Nuggets last year. Has played 7 NBA games. So, of course, you expect this guy to look good. He's played in the NBA before, and he does. He's beating defenders more handily than Aaron Holiday, I think, even. He's getting some shots. He's getting to the rim. He actually missed, like, 4 dunks in this game. If he makes them all, he goes 8 for 13 with, like, 27, I'm doing some stupid math, wow, with like 19 points. I mean, he did a lot of good stuff with the ball. His defense was pretty good. Now, this is just completely random, appropriate of nothing. I'm not saying this will happen. I don't even think this is a thing that might happen. I just think it could happen. There's a chance that the way the Pacers structured their contracts with Brogdon and Lamb confirmed deals, that they are leaving a minimum spot open for a guy with 1 year of service, which would fit the bill for Purcell to get a minimum deal with the Pacers into their cap space on a 3-year deal, although all of the years could be non-guaranteed. Just throwing it out there. But I don't think that will happen. But he did do well. He did do well, and that is worth discussing. And I think he's proven, you know, why he was an NBA player last year and how he could impact the game at the pro level. But this team is just not very good. They don't really have a rim protector. Their spacing is a disaster. They have no shooting. Those go hand in hand. And in tandem, they, you know, are missing, which means they're giving up transition, which means they're running against set plays with no spacing again. And then they're not getting enough transition because they don't have a good enough defense. It's just, it's all a mess. They lost by 18. They lost by 26 in the first game. They just don't look very good. So hopefully they can pick it up. But we'll see. They play again today at 5:30. I don't know when you're listening. This is Tuesday at 5:30 and then Thursday at 6. Stick around and watch those. They're fun. I tweet a lot of the fun clips on my Twitter feed, at TEastNBA. You can follow this podcast at LockedOnPacers. That is all for today's show, and we will see you guys tomorrow.